So, during the last lecture, we saw how to adapt the conjugate gradient method for, let's say, linear system or strictly convex quadratic function to minimize more general objective functions. And we came up with this method. The core idea is to replace the residual in the formulas with minus the gradient of f at the current point. The difficulties that have to overcome deal with the fact that since the function is no longer quadratic, we don't have a formula for the exact line search, and so we have to replace the exact line search with an inexact line search, and we have seen that we need something more than the wall conditions that we exploited in the general gradient methods to achieve a descent direction due to these additional terms which provides the so-called conjugation. And actually it is enough to strengthen one of the work condition, namely the curvature condition, in order to achieve a descent method. Here on the blackboard you have the convergent results, which are pretty weak, and we will discuss why. Under the assumption that f is bounded by below, the gradient is a Lipschitz mapping. We wrote down the definition last time. So under this assumption, we can prove the existence of a subsequent such that the sequence of gradients goes to zero. Here we say the norm of the sequence of gradient goes to zero. This does not guarantee in any way that the subsequents converge, but only that the norms of the gradient go to zero. Let's say the norm of the gradient is not bounded away from zero. If we add the assumption that the sublevel set given here, which contains the whole sequence xk, since this is a descent method, is compact, then we can prove the existence of at least one cluster point of the sequence, which is a stationary point of f. And actually, since we have already proved the existence of this subsequence, this is contained in a compact set, so at least it has a cluster point, and this cluster point, by continuity argument, must satisfy is equal to this limit, and so is zero. And I also address you one reason why this was not work. This result is weak. These results are weaker than the result we have for general gradient methods, and I will be back to it in a moment. I just want you to show an example in one dimension, so it's a stupid example, it's trivial, to show you that this may happen. Okay? Actually, in general, also for other methods, it may happen. Okay? You imagine, how is it possible that the sequence of gradient goes to zero and the sequence does not converge? An example in one dimension is given by this f, which is x squared e to the power of x. If you take some time to draw the picture of the graph of this function. This function is always non-negative. It goes rapidly to plus infinity as x goes to plus infinity, is 0 at 0, and then has this behavior where this local maximum is minus 2. The fact is here that this, for x that goes to minus infinity, goes to plus infinity. It's a square. This goes to 0. But since it is an exponential, it goes to 0 much faster than this goes to plus infinity. And so if you take the limit, it goes to 0. Okay? So this function has a global minimum, a local maximum. But if you start adding the same method, let's say from this point, and any point which is any coordinate which is less than minus 2, and you apply the same method, and the same method will generate a sequence like this. This sequence goes to minus infinity, okay? And if you compute the derivative of f, which is this, and you take the limit for x that goes to minus infinity, you get 0. So this is an example in which this thing may actually happen. Okay? Notice one thing. Let's say, okay, this is x0. So, let's take all the points at which the function takes a value which is less or equal than f at x0. We get this half line and this segment. In any case, this is not a compact set because it is unbounded. So this assumption is not satisfied, for instance, okay? But I wanted to show you that this may actually happen. Clearly, if you start, let's say, from here, okay, any descent method will bring you to zero, to a global minimum point. But if you start from another point, this thing may happen in the descent methods, okay? And indeed, for non-linear conjugate gradient method, this is what we can prove, or with an additional assumption, the existence of at least one cluster point. In gradient methods, we actually had that each cluster point was a stationary point of our function. So we get, even with this additional assumption, a weaker result. Okay? Why is this? Well, one reason may be the following. To prove this theorem, you actually prove that this quantity goes to zero. Okay, where theta k is the angle formed by the gradient and the direction, okay, as usual. In gradient method, in the original gradient method, in which the direction is minus the gradient, is the steepest descent direction, this angle is always pi. So that this cosine is always minus 1. And you have that this whole sequence goes to 0. Okay?
When we run algorithms
with inexact line search, we accept more freedom for the descent direction. You could do the inexact line search with the steepest descent direction or with another direction, but our assumption was that this angle was bounded away from pi, 1/2 pi. Okay? So that the angle was not going to be in the limit 1/2 pi. Okay? So that we are actually saying that this quantity, this cosine, is bounded away from zero. So that this sequence goes to zero. The trouble with the non-linear conjugate gradient method is the following. This angle may go to zero. Okay? So, we can prove that for an appropriate subsequence, this limit is zero, but we cannot prove that the limit of the whole sequence is zero. Okay? If the limit of the whole sequence is zero, then you get the fact that each cluster point is stationary. Since we can just prove that for an appropriate subsequence, this goes to zero, we have the existence of at least one cluster point only. So, this is the theoretical reason by why where things may go bad. Okay? And I want to show you that there are some more bad news. Okay? That angle may become 1/2 pi. The gradient direction and the direction we choose may become more and more orthogonal as iteration go by. So let's try to examine what happens when this angle is, let's say, roughly 1/2 pi. Okay? So that this cosine is almost zero. Okay? Well, I want to show you that we have that this may lead to slow convergence in the sense that the algorithm may produce a long sequence of iteration with very small moves. Okay? Very small step size and a large, so you don't move much. Okay? Then maybe you start to move faster again, but you don't generally. So this may be a trouble from the practical point of view. So, okay. Let's say the cosine is almost zero, so also minus the cosine is almost zero. We know, let's keep the minus, that we have this relationship between this angle and the vectors which form this angle. And we know am I right?
Yeah.
That these two quantities are equal. Okay, somehow this is one of the many definitions you can give for the cosine. Okay, but the interesting thing is that during last lecture I showed you a result on how small or how big this may be. You remember, we had the theorem that this quantity was greater or equal and less or equal than two quantities, and we knew that that provided the same direction. Now I use them explicitly, and so that result provides us with this inequality, okay, it was this is less or equal than this for the norm, for the norm of this square. So what is left here is the following thing. We knew that you didn't have this here, you had the square and was greater or equal than that quantity, so we now multiplying everything by that term, we get this inequality. Our inequality was this one. Let me check if it is correct. Yeah. Okay. You multiply by minus one, so you switch the sign. Okay. Then you multiply both members by this quantity, and you get this inequality. Okay. The point is that this quantity is positive, because C2 is between 0 and 1/2, and is almost 0, okay? Well, let's say for instance that as a coefficient we take 1/4, 1/3, this is not 0, okay? This is not close to zero. So this must be close to zero. What does it mean? It means that the numerator is much smaller than the denominator. So I'm doing an informal reasoning, okay? It's an informal argument. Roughly speaking, if this is almost zero, this must be much smaller than this. So all I'm saying now is approximate. It's not a mathematical proof. Okay. So, but in general, the norm of this vector is much smaller than the norm of this vector. Okay. Let's say this is roughly much smaller. Furthermore, what does it mean that this cosine is almost zero? It means that this direction is almost orthogonal to the gradient, or to minus the gradient. So it's almost orthogonal to the steepest descent direction. Okay? So it is likely, once again, not a formal argument, it is likely also that the step won't be large, since if you move in the steepest descent direction, that is the asymptotically the best thing you can do, is the direction of maximum asymptotic decrease. If you are almost orthogonal to it, it is likely that you are going towards something which is not even a descent direction, and so it's likely that you will make small step. Once again, I'm telling you, I'm not saying it mathematically, okay? It's a practical argument. So we have this, and we have this. Okay?
Well,
if the step is small, it's it's likely that the new point will not be far from the previous point. Okay? You make a very small move, you are here, regardless which direction you take, the step is very small, so you keep close. If this is close, then since the gradient is a continuous map, also the gradients will be not very different. Okay? Now, let's make a further step. We moved from xk to a point which is likely to be close, xk plus 1. Okay? Now we want to run away from xk plus 1. We will move along direction dk plus 1. Direction dk plus 1 is this. Okay? Now, let's look at this. Well, these two vectors are pretty close. Beta k is there, okay? Beta k plus 1 is the ratio of the square of their norms. So since the two vectors are very close, their norm will be very close. So this number is likely to be close to 1. Okay? Now, so this is likely to be close to this vector. Okay, and since these two vectors are close here, I can take away minus 1. Okay, this is roughly this is roughly 1, so we have this. Now, the norm of this vector is much smaller than the norm of this vector. So you are summing a large vector with a very small vector. Okay? The vector you will get will be pretty close to this. So, this is close to decay. Okay? So, this informal argument is showing you, okay, suppose that the direction is, the conjugate direction is pretty, rather orthogonal to the gradient at the current point, so this is zero. At the next iteration, the direction will be close to the direction of the current iteration. So, and what happens? Well, if the direction is close to the previous one, the behavior will be almost the same. Once again, the cosine will be, it's likely to be close to zero, and so on. And you can repeat the argument. So it's very likely that you will get a sequence of very small moves with very similar directions. Okay? And so the convergence to an eventual stationary point can be very slow. Okay? Notice this is not a mathematical argument because this is not mathematical. It's not a mathematical exact statement. This is not an exact mathematical statement. So, this may happen, but does not necessarily happen. Okay? Well, ways to overcome this trouble. One way is the following. And it is called the restart technique. Okay. We always have a direction for which that cosine is not close to zero, which is, I just erase it, minus the gradient. Okay. So, when the gradient and the direction start to become orthogonal, we could, for instance, take beta k to be zero. Okay. What happens when we take beta k to be zero? We are doing a step of the gradient method. Okay. So, when that situation happens, you can run an iteration with beta k equals zero. And you are somehow restarting, because in all directions you are keeping the memory of the previous directions. Okay? You are keeping track of the previous directions. When you put beta k to be zero, you are forgetting what happened before. Okay? The algorithm keeps memory of previous directions. When you put beta k equals zero, you erase that memory and you restart again with a gradient method iteration. Okay? So, this is the idea. Well, when to do that? You check if directions are orthogonal or not. Well, the standard way to do this is to perform a restart after a constant number of iterations. Let's say that you take beta jn n bar to be zero for each j. Okay? And so on. After n bar iteration, you make a restart. Okay? And a general choice for n bar is n. Well, here you have also a nice result, because if you take this subsequence, the subsequence of the iteration at which you perform a restart, okay, well, you can prove that this subsequence satisfies this property when you make restart, okay? So, if you perform a restart, you actually know which subsequence is this, okay? This happens. This happens with your subsequence. You can prove it, okay? In a similar way, you can prove the theorem. Okay, so, if this happens, you will have that the limit for j that goes to zero of this norm is zero. Okay? The point is that at those iterations the cosine is one. The cosine of the angle is minus one. Okay? Well, there is also an additional remark. Practical experience suggests to take n bar equal to n, but generally nonlinear conjugate gradient methods are applied to problems of large dimension, in which n is pretty large. And it's not likely that this will be satisfied. Actually, doing this restart after a finite number of after the same number of iterations is a guess on the fact that direction becomes orthogonal. Okay? It's not necessarily true. Another technique which is used in practice is somehow to have a way to perform the restart automatically. I mean, the algorithm performs the restart without having the programmer, the coder, to impose it. Okay? And this is called the Pollack Riviere variant of the method. And it's based on the following remark. In the linear case we have this. Okay. And we translated it in the general case by this equality. But in the linear case it is always true. This is always true. Two writings are equivalent because this scalar product is zero by the property by the properties of the linear conjugate gradient method. Well, but if you go to the linear to the general case with the general F, these and these are no longer equivalent. So Pollack-Riviere idea was to exploit this formula and so making this choice for beta k. Okay, and then I'm almost done with theoretical arguments so that I can show you some pictures. And the point is, why this is performing the restart technique almost automatically? Because if the gradients at two iterations, consecutive iterations, are very close to each other, this is close to zero. So if these gradients are closed vectors, then beta k is close to zero. Okay? So when that bad situation happens, you approximately apply with this choice the restart technique in an automatic way. Okay? Looks a nice idea. It looks a nice idea. Theoretically, it's very bad. Because you cannot prove almost anything except for very particular cases. Okay? It works in practice. But you cannot even prove that this is in the same direction in general. Okay? And with this choice, it may happen also that beta k is negative. Okay. Actually, you can build, well, let's say there exists a tough counterexample showing that the algorithm may not converge at all. So there is an example, you apply this variant and the method does not converge. Okay? The gradients do not go to zero. Okay? It's a tough example, it's just a curiosity. It's in R3, but the point is that you don't have an explicit expression for F. F is a solution of a system of the differential equations. So, you know, since that is a solution, has some properties, you apply the properties and you show that the algorithm does not converge. But you don't have an explicit formula for F, for the counterexample. It's very tough. I tried to read it and it's a tough reading. But the very last remark
is the following.
Well, there's an additional variant of the Paula Revere technique, which says, okay, this is bad. Okay. If this happens, I take zero rather than the negative coefficient. So there's another technique that says, okay, if we call this Pollack Revere beta k, this technique tells to take the maximum between the Pollack Revere coefficients and zero.
Okay,
so that if this is positive, you take it. This is negative, you take zero and you apply a restart. With this variant, it is possible to prove some convergence result. Similar to these ones, with little different assumptions, but I'm not interested in that. The point of the lecture is, is the following. This algorithm does not have very good theoretical properties. Okay? It might be very slow, but in practice, generally it works pretty well. So, now, I switch to the computer and I show you a couple of examples. So we have roughly 10 minutes. Let's see if we make it. Okay. So my idea is to show you two examples. The first is obvious. We apply the method to a strictly complex quadratic function in R2, two iterations and you are done. Then I will apply it to the Rosenbrock banana function. If you remember well, when we performed gradient methods, we took the break, 10 minutes, and the algorithm was still running and not even very close to the solution. So, okay, so this is the same quadratic function we use to run simulation for the gradient methods. It is n equal 2, obviously, x1 squared plus 5 times x2 squared. Okay, so these are the level sets. That is the starting point. If you remember, gradient methods were zigzagging towards the solution, which is 0, 0. If we run the method, it works this way. Okay? Two iterations, like you know in theory. Since the function is strictly convex and quadratic, we have also had that that gradient method with finite convergence using the eigenvalues. Okay. If you run that, you look. It seems that you get the exact same result. It is not true because this is not This is not the horizontal line. Okay? In that situation, in the first iteration, you always go to the horizontal line and then you move. Maybe I can run it with with another starting point to make it clearer. Okay, that other algorithm had find out this point and then move horizontally. Okay, but they work fine. Now I'll show you. Well, this is with the exact line search. We could use also the Wolf conditions, the strong Wolf condition here. And indeed, let's say once again free two, you run the method. Okay, it's as fast because you don't have to solve, you have a formula. So it's still fast, but it runs a number of iterations before going up there. And here you can see, sorry, iterations are you can see that it moves around the solutions somehow and not zigzagging. Okay, around, because conjugacy is helping to is somehow following the level curves. And then I want to show you, and then I guess we are done, the Rosenbrock method, if you remember this function, which was x2 minus x1, x2 minus x1 squared whole squared plus 100 times the square of the difference. But anyhow, it was a very steep canyon, and the canyon had the shape of a curved shape, and the level curves had the form of bananas. Okay. And the optimal solution was in 0.11. Okay. It was easy to compute by hands. It was, if the function is always non-negative and takes value zero only if the two squares are zero, and that happens for x1 equal x2 equal one. Now it takes a little time to draw the level curves. Now, here you will see the effect of keeping track of the previous direction. You will really notice that this memory effect is relevant. Because when we were running gradient methods, the fact that these level curves were very narrow had the effect that your steps were very short, because you moved in the steeper descent direction, you crossed the level curves and you stopped immediately. And then you went in the next iteration, you moved almost in the opposite way. And so you were making short progress towards the solution. Here we have the method. I can tell you once again with the example. Here you were going with a gradient here, and then here, and then here, and then here, 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 and it took more than 1,000 iterations to get to this area where we stopped after the break last time. Here we can apply the method. Here it is. You see a sequence of short steps, and then you get close to the solution. Okay? Here what you see, the first is minus the gradient, so is the usual step of the other method. The gradient method would have led you in this direction. Here, instead, you keep track of the previous direction, and you almost follow the curvature of the canyon. Okay? Here you had some troubles because I did not apply any restart technique, and so here it was looking that since you made a small step, the direction results here are almost orthogonal to the gradient. You make a sequence of small steps, but then you are lucky in this equation. You are lucky because at a certain point you move away, and it starts again to go a bit faster. And if we check it, it took 25 iterations only. Okay, and the solution we got is pretty good because first, second, third, and fourth digits after the point are all exact. Okay, so in practice, it may work really fine. Okay, because this effect of keeping memory of the previous iteration can allow you to follow the shape of the level set in a better way. Okay, but from the theoretical point of view, you don't have much. You don't have good properties. Okay, something, but among the weakest, probably the weakest we will see. With appropriate assumption, at least one cluster point is a stationary point. Not a good result, but in practice it may work pretty well. Okay, so let's stop here, and after the break, Professor Bevilacqua will start showing you method, Newton-Raphson's method for non-linear systems of equations.